Hello, smart friends. Now, before we get into this really exciting episode, just a little shout out about a conference that's coming up in Brisbane. So the Urban Motion Conference is an initiative of the Asia Pacific Construction and Home Expo. This conference is designed to be a multicultural collaboration of leading businesses, thought leaders, and organizations within the smart city environment. Now, this conference is in Brisbane on the 19th and 20th of November 2018. I believe tickets are still available. So if you think that would be of interest to you, you can check out their website. It is apchexpo.com. That's apchexpo.com. Hope to see you there. So let's get into this episode. In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I had a really fascinating conversation with Jonathan Reichenthal, the Chief Information Officer for the City of Palo Alto, California. Jonathan shared a bit about his background in technology and why he loves the way technology can make positive things happen for individuals and the world. He talks about what it's like being, in his words, a bit of a maverick from the private sector, now being a public servant and working for the local government. Jonathan shares how the city of Palo Alto is working on digitization and the high degree of importance they place on collaboration with the community. We talk about what a smart city or smart community means to Jonathan and why it's so important, and how being in these opening chapters of the fourth industrial revolution is creating a lot of change for all of us. We talk about some of the projects that Palo Alto is currently working on and why decision making and leadership is key to better integration across the different disciplines. We finish off discussing emerging trends, including human trends of the digital divide and human rights, and tech trends such as blockchain, artificial intelligence, and data. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play with smart communities. The future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Jonathan. How are you?
Doing great.
That's good to hear. Let's jump straight in. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's wonderful to speak to you from sunny Northern California all the way to Australia. That's really neat. Cool technology here.
Yes.
So I've been doing tech probably for almost 30 years. Somewhere in there, I also had a little bit of a detour into the music industry, but never lost my love for technology and actually the role of technology in making positive things happen, whether it's in your life outside of work or as a way in which to augment and support work activities. And now more broadly, the way in which technology can help society in very positive ways. I've worked in a few organizations. I worked with my brother for a few years, actually, over in Europe. And then here in the U.S., I worked for a large public accounting firm, PricewaterhouseCoopers. Spent actually a good deal of time with them and held many, many different types of roles. You know, when you work for a massive global firm, you can have multiple careers in one business. But I held a lot of tech roles, everything from working in the support organization to running a large software engineering group. And then towards the last few years I was at the firm, I was the head of technology innovation, which was really just a stellar opportunity. Really enjoyed it there. And then I came out to California, came out to Silicon Valley. And, you know, I'm very pleased I did it. And this is, you know, quite a unique place in the world. I formed a tremendous network. I worked with Tim O'Reilly at O'Reilly Media for a little while as his CIO. And then I got a calling, to work for the city of Palo Alto, birthplace of Silicon Valley. And, I'd never really considered government as a job before or to work as a technologist within government. But I was intrigued, very intrigued. And it was not a decision I made quickly. I certainly worked with my friends and family members and folks I trust to figure out if it was the right move for me. And, you know, there definitely was a risk. But, you know, looking back now, 7 years, although I can't believe it, 7 years at the city.
Wow.
It's been a pretty incredible ride on so many different levels. The risk paid off, and I've just been so privileged to work with some of the neatest people, and we've tried to push the needle forward a little bit on making our community more smarter and more efficient using technology, and created sort of models for other cities of our size to emulate what we do well, and of course learn from what we don't do so well. So that's the abbreviated version of my career to date.
Cool. So what sparked your interest in this smart space?
You know, it's funny, when I joined the city of Palo Alto, I was, you know, within a few weeks, I was sitting with the city manager who's my boss, and, you know, he's the equivalent of the chief executive officer for the city. And I said, you know, what do we want to make as our sort of bold vision for technology? Because here we were, you know, he had and continues to have to this day a very strong disposition towards innovation. And here was me coming in sort of a bit of a maverick from the private sector on tech usage. And like we had to come up with something interesting. And he said, look, go away, Jonathan, and figure it out. You know, came back and said, I think we should become one of the leading digital cities in America. I think we should transform the analog ways in which city works, all this paperwork and inefficiency, and push as much as we can capability to smartphones and online, and get rid of all the filing cabinets and the abundance of paperwork we have at City Hall, and make things more efficient, more accurate, lower cost, and just create a better experience. So really our focus was digitization. That really was where we spent the first couple of years focusing, and made some good progress. You know, we went from just having just a small handful of digital services to today we have well over 60 digital services, both online and a whole suite of apps that our community can use. And so this was back in 2012. And, you know, there were lots of different types of activities happening around the whole eGov or Gov 2.0 space. But nothing sort of solid was yet forming in terms of a strong global movement. People were focusing on open government. People were focusing on digitization like us. Of course, IBM and some of the big vendors were pushing this concept of a smart city, really beginning to think about pervasive technology across departments and services. And so, you know, that whole area began to elevate in its significance. And we started to recognize, you know, we have so many difficult problems to solve. I mean, they're interesting problems. And we now recognize that technology is going to be the heart of solving those problems. And so now we have a vendor space that's beginning to step up and help solve some of those problems. And, you know, it's like, well, this isn't the next stage of digitization. This is the broader sort of not only inward facing and outward facing digital services, but the intersection of digitization and hardware, things to instrument the streets and the public arena. And so, you know, watching the innovation closely, whether it was the emergence of IoT, the greater usage of data in running, you know, the city, beginning to really get a sense of, hey, it looks like we're going to autonomous vehicles, and these vehicles have to be connected. And, you know, responding to the need for, you know, everybody to have fast, ubiquitous access to the internet, it became clear that there was something bigger going on here. And, you know, as a technologist, true and true as I am, I figured, you know, that this is, we not only need to begin to embrace the broader suite of technology solutions, but we can lead. We can actually create models for others. And we have this unique position of the world here, being in the birthplace and heart of Silicon Valley, to work with the best and help others discover what's possible and what's possible, what isn't possible. So that's kind of, you know, the different elements of our interest and why we recognized that clearly there was something bigger going on here, and we could begin to take advantage of it. And you know, even today, as you and I speak, this, if we call it a movement, it's still evolving. It's still not clear where we're headed and who the big players are going to be. And so it's all at play. I mean, to me, you know, well, maybe we'll talk about this later. In case we don't, I just wanted to get that out, this out here, which is, you know, we're in the beginning, you know, the opening chapters of a revolution, a fourth industrial revolution, where, you know, the way in which the world enters this revolution will look completely different on the other side. And whether that includes things like smart cities or smart technology, and whether we include things like artificial intelligence and blockchain and big data and all those other, you know, catchphrases and popular things right now, whatever it is, and there's going to be more of it, we're in a great big transformation. And an individual and an organization is not going to be able to sit this out.
Excellent. So let's move on to the next one. And I'm really keen to hear what a smart city means to you.
Yeah, it's something I think about a lot. And probably if different people ask me this question every few weeks, I may have a slightly different answer because it's changing. One of the most succinct ways I've been able to describe a smart city or smart community and what it means to us is it's a response to some very big challenges with technology at the center, right? So, you know, you think about, we're in the process right now of a great global decarbonization. You know, the city of Palo Alto, we're moving to electricity, electrification, right? We're starting to downsize our footprint around gas usage. We're encouraging people to buy electric cars and to retire their combustion engine cars. We are only procuring as best as we can for at least the consumer market, non-carbon energy, solar, wind, and geothermal, and some others. When you look at transportation, and you know, up here in Northern California, it's bad. I mean, there's so much congestion. The economy is booming right now. That's great. Thumbs up. But there's also this other side of it, which is, well, you know, what used to take 30 minutes now takes an hour to drive. And, you know, all this prosperity is, you know, more people are driving, and that's impacting the climate. And, well, of course, we want people to use public transport and bicycles, and we want people to buy electric cars. So all of this, all of these things that are happening at scale right now, responding to them in a thoughtful way with technology and improved, you know, behaviors. To us, I think that's what we think about a smarter community. It's not business as usual. We can't respond in the way we did 20 to 30 years ago. It just doesn't cut it. It's going to be ineffective. We have to make bold decisions, big decisions, some major investments. We got to do it regionally and nationally and now globally. So, you know, the definition that we use more broadly, just to kind of describe what a smart city is it's using technology to improve livability, workability, and sustainability. And we're pretty happy with that.
Mm. Why do you think that this concept is so important?
Well, first of all, the future of everyone is in an urban context. You know, we're moving into cities now, 2 million people per week. By the middle of the 21st century, between 70 and 80% of all humans, of which there'll be about 9 billion of us, will live in a city. So our future belongs to cities. You know, I say this over and over. So I think if we're going to live in cities, which it looks like we are, we're going to want clean air. You know, we have terrible statistics on bad air around the world. The World Health Organization says about 7 million people die from air quality issues every year, right? This is a real issue. We want clean air. We want clean water. We have some really bad examples of what happens when, you know, the water isn't properly managed, both in terms of scarcity, but also in terms of not having access to clean water without chemicals in it that are just bad for human health. And these are just two examples, right? And we got to fix transportation so we have clean, rapid ways of moving around. So there's an urgency. There's a massive urgency. And lastly, and I left it to last because it's the biggest topic of all, is our cities are where the climate has been changed, and cities are where we're going to fix the climate crisis if we have any chance of fixing it. And the sad reality is if we don't fix the climate crisis within the next, by about 2045, we do have to start looking for another planet, right? I'm laughing, but it's sadly very sobering. We have got the planet. If you're to believe the scientific consensus, which many of us do, and I certainly do, we have to manage the degrees to which the average temperature of the Earth, is heating. We have to manage that and stop it. Otherwise, the momentum is unstoppable. So we're going to fix it in cities. And so that's why it's important. This matters to every single one of us. You know, there's nobody on the planet who gets to say, this isn't my problem. Right.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the US is currently embracing this concept?
Well, cities are actually are stepping up. You know, I sense in your question, you are commenting perhaps on our national politics right now. They're complicated, and it's an unusual time as the United States, as an extension, the world is also confused by our federal and national politics. But the reality is, and this kind of, again, magnifies my point previously, it's cities that matter. So it's mayors that are going to be having the biggest impact on, you know, the climate crisis, for example, and then clearly the way in which their cities operate. Now we don't live in a vacuum. We have to work with our state colleagues, and we have to work with our federal colleagues, absolutely. But the power to actually influence the future is now fully embedded in cities. That's where GDP is created. That's where the climate crisis will be fixed. That's where we will solve and take care of air quality and water quality and energy. So if I was to go back to your initial question, you know, how is the United States dealing with this? At the city and the mayor level, I think we see some tremendous leadership. Now, America has 90,000 cities and towns. That's 90,000, 90,000. And so, you know, there's plenty of room for improvement, and there's plenty of room for more, progressive leaders to make the right decisions around the environment and around our key urban issues. But all the trajectory suggests at the city level, we've got some, amazing leaders, and we're heading in the right direction.
Mm. You've spoken a lot about, technology in our cities. I'm interested to hear about because working for the local government, how do the people in your community kind of fit into that smart community space?
Well, there's nothing we can do today that isn't benefited from collaboration. And in fact, I wanted to say there's nothing we can do in the absence of collaboration. You know, we're all in this together. And so we succeed here in Palo Alto because we are so well integrated between the public servants like myself and the community members, and also with the private sector and with academia and other NGOs. We all have to work together. And so when it comes to things like, for example, emergency response, we live in a place where an earthquake can happen at any moment, and it can be bad. And so we all have to be playing well together. We have to work with our community, with our regional friends, and with our public safety colleagues, and with the other responders. We got to be practicing, and we got to be all in concert. So there is a significant need for and a high degree of importance placed on collaboration. I don't know if our community members would ever use the terminology smart communities or even smart city. That's less important than what we're doing and how we do it. You know, if we solve a problem in the community, for example, making it easier to find a parking space, or even something much more current, which is the ability to manage energy usage better at the home level, you know, at the house level. Our community is happy. They have a better interface to collect and understand their energy usage. And we can provide as a city, more efficient energy as a consequence, we would all agree that that's the fact that we're using technology to drive that and connectivity to drive that is smart. And it's, we at City Hall could call it smart technology, but that's less important than the fact that we're getting results. It is useful in a lot of contexts to say, hey, this is our smart community strategy. Here's what we're doing. Here's how we compare with other communities. It's useful to have names for things and categories for things. I think we have to acknowledge that. But for the everyday community member, that is less important to them. They just want to know that we're using contemporary technology. We're innovative in how we do things. We're managing cost. We're prioritizing effectively. I think we have been successful because we do integrate and collaborate between many, many different stakeholders quite well.
Yeah, excellent. That's awesome to hear. I'm really keen to hear about some of the other projects and things that you're currently working on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this morning I was meeting with my team to talk about all the IT projects that are in progress. And I was stunned to hear that we're kind of just exceeded 60 in-flight projects, 60 in-flight IT projects. So we probably have the largest portfolio of tech-related initiatives at the city ever in the history of the city. I'm pretty confident about that. So we're doing a lot of stuff. I mean, we got the basics, right? We're looking to move to the next generation of finance and HR systems. We're not immune to that too. Cities have to have good finance systems and good human resources systems. So we're working on that. We're working on some multimedia upgrades for our council chambers so that the quality that is broadcasted, whether it's over a TV channel or online, is better quality than the older technology we have today. We're building a couple of new fire stations that need all new technology. We are rebuilding what we call the Junior Museum and Zoo in Palo Alto. It's kind of pretty cool for a small community of our size. So then there's the back office stuff. We're migrating a lot of technology to the cloud. We continue to improve our cybersecurity capabilities. We're rolling out some further technology to protect our smartphones and tablets. We're migrating quickly now to Windows 10, finally. We're rolling out new hardware. So all staff are getting new laptops, which are all, state-of-the-art touchscreen with the latest version of Microsoft Office. We're firing on all cylinders here, and there's an incredible diversity of both community-facing technology plus technology to run the city itself.
We spoke about this a bit already, but how do you think we can better integrate across the different disciplines, government, industries, and I think we should also include community in there as well?
Yeah. Well, the first thing, of course, is to make the decision. The leadership of a community has to say, we are going to embrace all voices and we're going to create channels and opportunities for those voices. So you got to start there. It starts with a philosophical choice. Of course, it's for us, that's central to everything we do, but communities have to decide, how are we going to capture diverse opinions, both those who are supportive of innovation and technology use, plus those that would have concerns about different types of technology. They are right to have concerns about privacy. They're right to have concerns about cellular technology and the uncertainty of some of that. They have rights to be concerned about access to the internet, making sure that there is no more digital divide. And unfortunately, the digital divide continues to show up in so many of our communities on so many levels. So we have to philosophically make a choice to embrace different people. And then we have to choose the forums. I love obviously online forums. And here at Palo Alto, we use everything from Twitter to Facebook to stuff like a product called Open City Hall. But we also need to have analog convening too. We still strongly believe in the town hall concept in person. Get people in a room, get people to up on whiteboards and around tables, and figuring out together how we solve problems. You know, here in Northern California, we have tremendous transportation issues, and you know, we're not the smartest here at City Hall. We're smart. But there are other smart people too, along with our smart people at City Hall. And we got to make sure that we are all contributing towards, transportation ideas and where we want to prioritize and where we want to spend our money. So creating platforms, create the different platforms. We did a cool thing here. We've done a few neat things here with different platforms over the last few years. We've had, you know, pizza with a leader. So you meet at a pizza shop and you have a meeting with the chief of police or with our head of public works. We've had coffee meetings. We've had weekend hackathons. And so I think that's really, really important. And, you know, and then reaching out, you know, reaching out to those regional organizations that matter and have, you know, here again in our area, we've a lot of people who are concerned with and are taking action around the climate crisis. And we need to integrate with them. We need to make sure that the city is part of that agenda and contributing in a real positive way. So again, there's all of the above approach. I don't think today we can any longer sort of say, well, we're just going to be a Monday night, you know, town hall organization. Now we got to embrace voices on all the channels that exist today.
Mm. So it's not a kind of one size fits all. And also I really like that you mentioned the region kind of space as well. I'm really keen on the term smart regions, not as the term, but just what that means that, you know, even though we have a smart city here, it's about bringing in, you know, all the different people that are around that area, as well. And on that kind of global, you know, you've got the region, then you've got national, and then you've got that global level as well. And I think you're so right. You've been speaking a lot about a lot of those bigger, you know, issues like climate change and making sure people have access to good, clean air and water and those type of things, which sometimes we forget about the overarching, you know, global need of the world. And we can start that at a local level. So yeah, thanks so much for sharing that. This next question, again, really keen to hear what you think. What are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough?
Yeah, you know, I'm a guy who has spent 30 years in technology innovation, and I'm even exhausted by the rate of change and the rate of new tech, you know. So, you know, I have the greatest empathy for those that are who don't spend their day thinking about technology but are impacted by it. And look, there's an awful lot of things we have to think about. We do have to juggle and chew gum at the same time. I mean, that's just the nature of the 21st century. I want to go back to this idea of this fourth industrial revolution. I think we are collectively, we have to come to a place where we understand that things are happening now that have greater scope, bigger impact, and faster velocity, right? Scope, impact, and velocity are all going at rates that we've never seen in the history of humanity. We've never seen in the modern era. And so, you might say, well, what are those things? What is included? Everything's on the table. The nature of work, what it means to be, a human worker now in the future. Will we have jobs, when the robots and artificial intelligence does things so much better than we can do it and faster and smarter. I'm not saying that's the case, but certainly we need to have heightened awareness and be able to respond to the things that might happen, and they might happen fast. There's the future of energy. How do we make sure that the world has access to abundant, clean energy, you know, all through the 21st century and beyond? How do we protect the planet? You know, what steps do each of us need to take as individuals? And then what do we have to take as groups? And then, as we talked about, cities, regions, and beyond. So I think, you know, these areas we're probably, we have a mixed bag of approaches. And, you know, as been said before, the future is here, but it's not evenly distributed, you know, and that couldn't be truer when it comes to our cities. There are cities that are way ahead, cities that are are way, way behind, still grappling with some of the most basic human challenges that the United Nations Sustainability Development Goals quite clearly point out. Still, some basic human needs are not being met. But I think the spirit of your question was probably focused on maybe some new tech, right? And so, you know, I'm very intrigued by distributed ledger technology or blockchain technology. You know, that's interesting. And it's moving from a novelty to potentially something that really could be used to help us rethink, you know, information security, things like the speed of transactions, the trust models that we apply to information technology. All of that can potentially be improved with blockchain technology, depending where we go with it. And in a government context, the ability to have online voting in a secure way is very attractive to a lot of us. You know, I think that artificial intelligence, although we're kind of pounding this thing with a drum right now, I still don't think we're fully appreciating the impact of this. I really don't. You know, you think about a surgeon today, right? A surgeon who, you know, you trust with your life and comes impeccably equipped with knowledge and experience. And that surgeon, let's say you have to have a very serious operation. And, you know, historically that surgeon comes with their experiences, their schooling, and tries to do the best they can. And hopefully they do a great job. Now let's think about the world in which we're entering, which is the surgeon now augments themselves with some AI, and they can conduct an operation with the knowledge of every single other operation that's ever taken place, and the results of that, and all the different characteristics, for example, the person's gender or their weight, their background, their lifestyle choices. All of a sudden, the entirety of human knowledge on that topic can be brought to bear on one person at that point in time. We've never had that power before. I mean, that is absolutely game changing. Almost the surgeon becomes subservient to the AI because it's so much more well equipped than that human being could ever be. That's one tiny little example of how the things we have traditionally taken for granted are going to be radically transformed in the future. On a more pragmatic level, I think cities still have to discover the value of data in their operations. I really do think that the private sector, has acknowledged that the data they collect, let's say in appropriate ways, in legal ways, ethical ways, is beneficial to driving the success of a business. Government's been a little slower. Government, which by the way, collects more data, than probably any other entity, stores it for purposes of running government, you know, can start to leverage that as a real asset in moving forward with, solving problems and, complementing decision making. I'm excited about the potential of data in cities once we start to really embrace it the way that the private sector has for a while now.
Thanks so much for sharing. I'm glad that you shared two types of kind of emerging trends there. The technology obviously is very interesting, but also those, you know, global trends, of, you know, human rights and those type of things is stuff I want to talk about as well, because I think it all kind of fits into that smart community approach.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I smart communities and smart cities, it's not just a tech topic. It's not just about technology. It is about, you know, a all encompassing way of looking at a better future for all of us, a better quality of life in our urban context. And that's going to be everything from economics to politics to our democracy to our economics, culture and beyond. So it's a much bigger topic than perhaps I even give attention to in my talks and my interviews.
It's been so great to chat with you, Jonathan. I really just have one last question, which is, how can people connect with you?
Well, I'm easy to find. I don't know if that's a good thing, but
I found you pretty easy.
Yeah, in this digital world, you know, here we are. You're there in Queensland, Australia. I'm up here in California, in the United States. We're talking to each other over our smartphones using an app. You know, the world is incredible right now. and we're just getting started. So yeah, you can find me online, of course. I really love Twitter. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but you can get me on Twitter easily at @Reichenthal, at @ReichenThal. I think that's probably the best way to learn about what we're working on. I am quite prolific in the extent to which I share the things we're doing, and even funny things that are just interesting to me. And I'd encourage people to follow me on Twitter and reach out to me that way too.
Excellent. We'll put the links in the show notes so people can click away and find you.
Wonderful. Well, it's been a real delight chatting with you. Hopefully one day we'll meet in the real world.
Yeah. Thanks so much again, Jonathan. It's been great. And yeah, I'm hoping to, I'm coming over to America next year. Not sure if I'll get over to your part of the world, but I'm sure in the future we can make it happen.
Great. Thank you.
Talk soon. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community or find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter @smartcompod. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears, so thank you in advance. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.